Hey everybody, this is Ashley Arpel Steinbach, host of Lots of Laughs, Work Advice for Me, and of course, Movie Torture, aka I am the queen of the Hopecast Network. Or if you ask me, the queen bee. I hope you're all enjoying the amazing shows we have here on the Hopecast Network, and if you are, please don't forget to like and subscribe everywhere that you listen to or watch our podcasts.
Okay, I am here with the First Lady of Movie Torture, and she has a huge announcement for everyone watching this reel right now. First Lady, what is it?
It is huge. You will either love it or you will hate it, but I am officially part of... What's it called? No, I'm for having a brain fart. The cast. Part of the cast for Movie Torture. No, I had a complete brain fart. But yes, I will now be on the podcast every week for Movie Torture. So if you're a fan, congrats. If you're not a fan, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, that's forget you if you're not a fan. How could you not be a fan? MTD is at the beach celebrating the fact that you are officially on the show. Every Monday, Movie Torture. Download it, subscribe, leave us a review. Tell us how much you love Hannah on the show.
This is the Hopecast Network. Stories and shows you actually want to listen to.
Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome back or welcome to Locks of Laughs podcast. I am your host, Ashley Arpel Steinbach, and I am so... I know I feel like I say this at the beginning of every episode, but this one I am truly so excited, and I'm honored to have Justin Yehuda, the creator, the owner, the everything of Iron Dome Coffee. You've probably seen Iron Dome Coffee all over my Instagram. I actually found, I'm going to say it again, Iron Dome Coffee on Instagram through an ad, and it worked. I bought the coffee, loved it, and from there, Justin, the owner, and I just forged a relationship through DMs, and we've never met in person, but I really wanted him to come on the pod to talk about everything he's doing with his company, why he created it, how he created it, the anti-Semitism that he has faced, not just because of creating a company that supports Judaism and Israel, but so much more. I don't want to talk too much about it. I just want to bring him on right now because it's kind of a long one. It's about an hour. But before I do, I'm obviously going to ask you all to like and subscribe anywhere, everywhere you are listening to this podcast. And if you want to follow on Instagram, our handle is at Locks of Laughs Podcast. Locks is LOXX, like your ex-boyfriend. We hate him, of Laughs Podcast. And if you would like to follow me personally, my Instagram is at That's Ashley's Kitchen. All right, everybody, without further ado, Justin Yehuda of Iron Dome Coffee. Justin Yehuda from Iron Dome Coffee, right here.
How you doing?
Thank you so, so much for coming on Locks of Laughs. You know I'm a huge fan of yours and your brand, so this is a big deal for me.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
Oh, I'm so glad. Now leave. No, I'm kidding. How long has Iron Dome been around?
So we just got to our fifth month in business. So still incredibly new, but
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's a mazel tov. That's amazing.
Thank you.
I think I know the answer already. I already told you what I'm noshing on. It's Iron Dome Coffee. What are you noshing on today?
Well, I'm actually having some of the Tel Aviv French vanilla, but the decaf version, you know, it's 4 p.m. In New York City. So, you know, you got to keep that sleep schedule right. So
decaf
in the afternoon.
I don't even know the term. I can't do decaf if I must, but it's not my thing. French vanilla. I haven't tried that one. Do you love it?
Yeah, that one is a lot of people's favorite. You know, it's definitely one of the best flavors, I would say.
Is it a really high selling one?
Absolutely. Yeah. That is probably the best selling flavor that we have. So we have the Jerusalem Sunrise, which is a medium roast, and the Sabra Spirit Dark Roast. Mm-hmm. And after that, Tel Aviv French Vanilla, close third place.
Interesting. I love the Sabra Spirit Dark Roast. I love that one. That one's good. That's what this is right here. I'm excited to try your cold brew. What's the fun name for the cold brew?
It's the Jerusalem Sunrise Cold Brew because it's a medium. And let me tell you, that one is amazing. Like that one is the drink of the summer. I have it every single day. I had a few cups this morning.
A few? How many cups of coffee do you have a day? And do you have more now than you did prior to opening Iron Dome?
Yeah. So throughout my entire life, I was probably like a one cup a day type of guy, you know? But now I usually will have either two in a decaf or three, which is
good for
you. Which is kind of fitting. Yeah. How about you? Are you a big coffee person? It seems like it.
Oh, I once had a doctor tell me that not only should I stop drinking coffee by 2 p.m., but I have to cut down. I think at that point, I was really overdoing it. I think I was having six cups of coffee a day. I stopped seeing that doctor, couldn't take the negativity. I am now about, I'm a four cup girl a day, but I don't do decaf.
Hey, that's okay, right? There's room for everyone.
There's room for everyone when it comes to coffee. Even tea drinkers, like let them in.
We're working on it. We're working.
Are you really?
100%, yeah.
Are you working on like a black tea? Like you know what black tea? I love an English breakfast tea. I also like matcha, but it depends.
So all of those, it's definitely, those are all definitely things I plan to get to hopefully by the end of the year, but maybe a little longer. It's very complicated to launch a new product and people think it's not because we have so many, but each individual product, you have to buy inventory, you have to plan for the release, you have to, you know, there's so many different steps that go into it. Tea, I think, can really, you know, open it up to all the non-coffee drinkers out there, and especially matcha. There's so many matcha drinkers out there. So I'm going to get there. Give me a minute, but I will get there for sure.
When did that happen? Like all of a sudden, within 45 minutes, a couple months ago, matcha became the biggest thing in the world. Like now every coffee shop, every tea place, it's all like strawberry matcha latte, lavender matcha latte, which by the way, I'm not complaining because I love matcha, lavender, all the good stuff. But I feel like it came out of nowhere.
Yeah. You know, a couple of years ago, I went on a trip to Japan with a couple of my close friends, and it's so deeply ingrained in their culture. We did like a different matcha trying places. We went to make our own matcha. It's just something that's very unique. But I don't know. I feel like since Japan has their own way of doing everything, they might have put their own spin on matcha that really landed with people, especially in the social media era where everyone is fascinated by a new and unique thing. So I have a feeling that might have been the leading cause. Like maybe just Japan strikes again in terms of a new product.
That's a good one. Japan strikes again.
Yeah, they really do things their own way over there. So I think matcha might just be one of them.
I feel like they are incredible when it comes to like quick and easy dining. I hear their 7-Elevens are, I mean, like gourmet.
You can't imagine. It's like so common there that everybody for lunch, they just hop into a 7-Eleven and it's like a fancy, you feel like you're in a fancy restaurant. You know, I don't know how to explain it.
I want to go. I've never been. I really want to go to Japan one day. I definitely want to go. I just feel like I might offend people only because I put a lot of soy sauce and wasabi on my sushi. And I know that that is a big no-no in Japan. I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm
you
scared.
Might.
I might offend people.
Yeah.
Okay. Enough small talk, Justin. Tell me about Iron Dome. How did that happen? How did that start?
Yeah. So here's the big thing, right? So obviously after October 7th, so many people wanted to do something that could contribute to Israel in some way. My family is, I'm half Israeli on my dad's side, right? And I have so many family members and my grandparents and cousins who I love more than anybody else, right? They are all in Israel. They have to deal with every single day, you know, the consequences of living in such a dangerous place. And the truth is, I've always felt a little bit Israeli in my heart, you know? I don't have a perfect grasp on the language, but I'm almost there. I can communicate with just about anyone. And I
always felt, I mean, you can really, basically fluent in Hebrew.
Almost. I don't want to say fully fluent, but I'm almost there because I feel like I want to speak the language of not only my ancestors, but my community in Israel. You know, I feel like my heart is definitely there. It's something that I can't really fake. And when October 7th happened, I really was pretty down in the dumps. You know, I couldn't focus on anything else because how can you just move forward with your life when something so awful is happening directly to people in your family, in your community? You know, Israel is such a small community that people from October 7th who were victims of that horrific attack is likely either the friend of a friend that you have or a family member. It's so close that I wasn't able to focus on anything else, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I left my job and I actually went to Japan to do stuff with my friends there. And I did this whole kind of soul searching trip where I really asked myself, like, what am I going to do with my life? You know, mm-hmm. what is the path that I want to go towards? And I always knew that it had to do with Israel advocacy in some way, because if you pay attention to what's going on in the world nowadays, it's feeling incredibly hopeless for people. And mm-hmm. not only, you know, in terms of the political situation in Israel, but just the sentiment towards the Jewish community at large is mm-hmm. something that I genuinely cannot stand. And every single second of the day, I'm watching YouTube, I'm having conversations with my friends. Like, this mm-hmm. is certainly a passion of mine. So I wanted mm-hmm. to get involved in it in some way, right? And I also have a sort of entrepreneurial spirit. I want to break the mold in some way, and I'm willing to work incredibly hard. That's just not only like an Israeli feature that I've taken to, but mm-hmm. also just central to my core identity as well. So you can look around and find so many different coffee companies that are supporting some sort of cause through a social media effort, mm-hmm. but none that are really doing so for Israel, and definitely not in a loud way.
Right.
So here's where I come in, you know, and it's been 5 months now with just aggressive marketing and not being afraid to show people where I stand when it comes to Israel. And thankfully, we've built really a successful group of people who love what we're doing, especially like you. Yeah.
Yeah. I first of all, I love what you're doing. And I also love your product, which is interesting because I'm very picky in particular with my coffee, but many people I'll say they don't always love what they're promoting, but they promote it because they love the cause, which, by the way, no disrespect, that's fine, love that, but you actually have an incredible product. And I found you on social media. I believe I found you through an ad that popped up because you've seen my social media, along with the ridiculous jokes I tell about going to the bathroom. I post a lot of food and drinks, and I mean some cocktails here and there, you know, but a lot of coffee and tea. And so I think I want to say beshared, but obviously it was an ad on Instagram. So it was both beshared and targeted reach. And I found your company. And when I ordered, I want to look back at what I first ordered. I think I ordered Sabra Spirit. And when it arrived, I posted because it was so, so good. And that's how you and I actually just met via DM. You really just have a great product. First of all, coffee come into it? I understand the startup, dialogue that you just spoke about. I mean, you're a complete startup. So how did it become coffee? And second of all, let's get to the second of all. Tell me how you decided upon coffee. I know. And by the way, have you been to Israel?
Well, more times than I can count.
Okay. So way more than me, because I've only been once. But coffee, especially, I mean, what's the version of it here? It's like a frappuccino.
Yeah, here, right. We got the Starbucks. And
right.
All that.
but I love Turkish coffee.
Mm-hmm. It's like packs a punch for sure.
It's chocolate. It's just pure chocolate. It's delicious. Mm-hmm. But the coffee is Aroma Cafe in Israel is just like everywhere and perfection. So was that an inspiration? Tell me how you decided upon coffee specifically.
So I think it's comes from a more entrepreneurial sense where the coffee with a cause model is just booming, right? And this mm-hmm. is something that can be observed. There are so many different coffee companies without naming them. You can pretty much think of any cause that exists out there. And there's likely a coffee company that's tied to supporting that cause, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it
mm-hmm.
isn't just, I mean, it's a lot of people get a bit confused. We aren't a charity directly, right? We are a serious coffee company, but we do mm-hmm. align ourselves with different charities, and a portion of our proceeds, 18% of profits, right? It goes to organizations that are helping Israel in some way, especially when it comes to wounded soldiers, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's how it all comes together. Why coffee? I mean, I've always loved coffee, but it is because of this broader shift away from the traditional brands like Starbucks and Dunkin'. I mean, Starbucks, I don't know if you're seeing in the news, they're really getting kind of crushed, you know, and it is because of companies like mine who are taking advantage of people's willingness to buy coffee from anywhere and put it into mm-hmm. their Keurig or however, mm-hmm. because it might speak to them on a personal level, you know, and even though right. that Starbucks Keurig pod might be something that they're more familiar with, they're much more comfortable switching over to something like Iron Dome coffee because mm-hmm. they know that it's not only contributing to something that they care about, but it makes them feel proud to support Israel in a time when it's so unaccepted to do so.
Yeah, actually, I want to talk about that. And then I want to go back to the actual name of Iron Dome Coffee, because I feel like that must have been a trademark debacle. But let's go back to that. How has it been? I mean, since launching 5 months ago on social media, where everybody, not everybody, but many people hide behind a keyboard and say outrageous things. I mean, even when I posted, not so much on my Instagram, oddly enough, but on my TikTok, where I have way less followers, I got a lot of hate. And so how has that been for you as the creator of this company?
So here's one thing that I've really taken from it, and I think it's actually very fascinating. Social media has connected the world in a way that makes it able for me to have a business like the one that I have, right? Mm-hmm. If it weren't for social media, there'd be no Iron Dome Coffee. We are running advertisements that reach people like you in a way that wasn't possible 10, 15 years ago. So in one way, social media is the, you know, secret ingredient to having a company like Iron Dome Coffee that I think clearly belongs in the world. Mm-hmm. That's the reason that we have this company. However, and there's a pretty big however here, it's that it also unites the world's anti-Semites into one little public forum, right? Mm-hmm. So everybody who has some sort of inner anti-Semitism gets to let it shine on social media with no repercussions, really. And I think it's so unbelievably dangerous because you have so many of these big podcasters who just pander to an audience that loves anti-Semitism. And I think the reason that it's going so viral is because this is how people feel inside anyway. And these podcasters who do, you know, really big shows and they make big cases against Israel, it doesn't need to be fact checked. It doesn't need to be true. It doesn't really even need to be consistent. They just need to pander to an audience that brings them views and then brings them money. And the safest bet of all time when you're talking about anything in public is hatred of Jews. Take a look at it. It always works. Mm-hmm. I hate that, right? It's horrible. And I'm a very proud Jewish person, right? Mm-hmm. I had the privilege of going with my school, the Solomon Schechter School of Westchester. It's now called the LaFell School.
I didn't know you went to Solomon Schechter.
Yeah, I'm a Schechter boy for sure.
I'm 10 years older than you, but I knew some people that went to Solomon Schechter. How interesting is that? Okay, keep going.
Yeah.
You went to Poland.
I had just this unbelievable privilege of getting to go to Poland, seeing the death camps. And I know it's a very dark topic, but this is really the reason why I'm doing what I'm doing. I got to see just the extent to which humanity can fail. And I always said, if anything like that happens during the time that I'm alive, I want to be a part of the fight against it. Because I had family members who weren't able to live their lives through because of people hating them for who they were as a human being. And I think it's disgusting. And I think it's being applied to Israel unfairly in today's day and age. So I want to be on the front lines of that philosophical debate that's going on, where somebody like me can come and explain why Israel belongs on the map and why it has a right to exist, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel incredibly proud knowing that every day I wake up and I'm contributing to Israel's mission in that way, you know, even beyond the entrepreneurial lens where I want to, you know, showcase my ability and do something positive for Israel on an industrial level. Mm-hmm. I want people to feel the way that I feel about Israel, which is just pure love, admiration, and need. We need it. We need it.
You know, you're incredibly brave. Because it's true. I mean, you're not only brave, but you're very well spoken. You're articulate. You're answering all of my questions better than I'm actually asking them. So I just want to thank you for that and applaud you. It's you're very courageous. Have you received any? I don't want to use the word backlash, but have people in your family or maybe your friend groups? Or group, have they expressed concern or have they been scared since the launch? Just because you are, in some ways, in a certain way, putting yourself in the line of fire.
Yeah, you can't imagine. You know, I'm just going to be totally honest with you. When you support Israel in public, it's not exactly the most attractive thing to people, right? Because it's an ugly situation that's going on. And mm-hmm. anytime you want to put yourself out there, I think for anything, you know, anytime mm-hmm. you want to put yourself out there into the world, you're going to be met with heat. But thankfully, I don't have that personality. I do have that patented Israeli irrational confidence. That's how I call it. You're just confident for no reason.
That's
and,
funny.
And I,
that's funny.
Right, when I have my mind set on something, there's absolutely no stopping me. And everybody that's around me knows this. Mm-hmm. Have some people definitely let me know that they don't love what I'm doing for one reason or another? Yes. And that stinks. You know, it really does.
Has it been friends? Yeah. I mean, have you lost friends because you're speaking up for Israel?
Absolutely.
You have. Yeah.
It's painful to.
Despicable.
I was having this conversation actually about an hour ago with a friend, and I've definitely lost friends since starting my company. Yeah.
Oh, that's horrible.
Mm-hmm.
That's real. I mean, were they friends from childhood?
As close as can be. Yeah.
That's terrible. And, you know, unfortunately, that's par for the course. I mean, I've gone through the same thing. You've seen my social media. I'm pretty vocal. I mean, it's blurred out. I'm wearing my hostage pin, but my hair is all over the place. I've lost friends because of it as well. And I just think that, and it's also one of those things where like, we don't have to believe the same thing for us to be friends. We can have different beliefs, but if you're not willing to talk about it and even if you say, hey, I'm not comfortable talking about it with you, let's talk about a reality TV. Fine. Okay. But it's difficult when someone just puts a line in the sand and says, no, I don't want to be your friend because you believe this or because you are this. And now the fad is, I don't like saying the fad is or it's popular now to be anti-Semitic, because these people that are spouting hatred, it's not as if they just all of a sudden became anti-Semitic. They're just more comfortable being themselves now because it's allowed and there's no repercussions.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think it's the vilification is their greatest strategy. I mean, not them, it's just whoever against Israel, against Jewish people. Mm-hmm. Vilification unfortunately works because it kind of cuts off that conversation. And I think that's their most effective strategy against Israel.
100%. And the thing is, it's frustrating and almost comical in a way, because there are... I'm using quotes, anybody that's listening and not watching, air quotes, the freedom fighters that are, you know, boycotting Israeli products, you have to stop using your phone. You don't take most medicine. I mean, there's so many things that it's unavoidable. And then they say, well, you're taking over. That's not, you can't just, what is that saying? Correlation is not the cause, or cause is not the correlation.
Causation does not equal correlation.
That's it.
Something
that's
like that. I get what you mean. You know, I think of it this way. I think there's such a lack of empathy in the world when it comes to Israel. And the fact that Israel is vilified so much makes people say, well, what about empathy for the other side? And I'm actually very understanding of that. Like, there should be empathy that mm-hmm. isn't selective, and that isn't just, you know, like to the people that you care about. Like, if you are going to approach this in the way that a leader would think, which is my mm-hmm. biggest goal, I'd love to be a leader in this space. You have to understand how things work on both sides. And I think the fact that people have so little empathy for Israelis and the type of horrific mm-hmm. experiences that they've had to deal with since mm-hmm. October 7th, and the world does not care about them one bit. Mm-hmm. It is horrific. You know, we just watched just horrific images come out of Gaza. It just breaks my heart completely, you know, that people do not care about the hostages. We need them home more than anything. Like, there's nothing worse than that. And I think that what the type of empathy that people do not apply to the situation is that they're expecting Israel and its leaders to pretty much give up everything, including the hostages here, which is a simple no-go. Like, I think everything mm-hmm. here boils down to getting the hostages home at this point. And Hamas has shown that they're very unwilling to do that. So I think that's where the conversation should begin, mm-hmm. but it's definitely not right now. It's about all of these deep conspiracy theories about what Israel is doing and what they're not doing, and images and the New mm-hmm. York Times and all of these horrific things that are coming out.
That's just terrible. I mean, you're from New Jersey. I am from New York, Tenafly, New Jersey.
It's where Don Alexander is from. Yeah.
Who is from there?
He was a hostage. He was from
Tenafly. Who did you say? Oh, Edan.
Don Alexander. Yeah.
Yes. I was thinking of something else, but yes, that is exactly right. I am from New York, and I grew up reading the New York Times, meaning it was always in my home because I grew up in New York, and it's not just horribly unsettling. It's so aggravating that I just feel like 15, 20 years ago, fact-checking was significant, and now it's just, well, print it, doesn't matter. Also, just going back to social media, everything is so instant. So it really doesn't matter what's printed on a page. It's, you just push a button and it's out there forever.
Absolutely.
And that's very, very frightening.
Yeah, and my big thing is that it seems like they're more eager to just align themselves against Israel for political reasons.
Mm.
It almost reeks of a setup where they publish that correction the next day for they posted an image of a child and then later said that they had I think it was cerebral palsy.
That's what it was. Mm-hmm.
So I think that is. It's such a deliberate lie that just got everyone excited. I don't remember the exact numbers, but that article reached millions and millions of people, and that correction only reached a few. I think it was something like 50,000 people. So it almost reeks of, a deliberate act.
Intention.
Against Israel, right.
Mm-hmm. When is the last time that you were in Israel?
I went in May, only a couple months ago, for my cousin's wedding. It was the best.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Where in Israel was it?
They live near Haifa. Yeah.
Okay. I went on Birthright, so I went to a bunch of spots, but my favorite was Svat.
That's great. Yeah. It's all great over there. I love
beautiful.
It there. Yeah. I was supposed to go back this summer, but it got canceled because of the war. So that was a tough one. Yeah, I'm so upset about that.
Yeah, do you think that there will be an ending soon?
The thing is that I feel like a lot of people ask me, like, I'm like the Israel guy, which, like, I'm happy to be, you know?
You but, are.
I'm very happy to be. My opinion is just based on what I see and hear. I think in like my answer is unfortunately, I think it completely depends on Hamas. I think they hold like the ball has been in their court this entire time. I mean, we've been saying you need to surrender and release the hostages and this whole thing could be over. And usually any, military or whatever that's in charge and they see their people dying in a war, they have a moral obligation to surrender. But Hamas is so sinister where they are using the starvation and death of their own people, which, by the way, they are stealing.
They're causing.
They are shooting their own people, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is not like a brand new tactic. This is something that happens in the Middle East, and they are using it to their advantage.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the most horrific thing about all of this, Ashley, is that every time they do these horrible, horrible strategies, they get rewarded for it by the international community.
Terrible.
To the point where their media leader, I forgot his name. I probably shouldn't even give it the credit of saying it, but he said, like, look what happened after October 7th. Now all of these European countries and Canada as well have decided to recognize a Palestinian state. And I think that it's an incredibly tough precedent because they are doing it in the face of October 7th. Like, they're rewarding that behavior.
Right, right. This wasn't even a thought for them, October 6th. And then...
Right. And it's also encouraging future attacks like October 7th. I mean, if you are Hamas and if you are the people who participated in the event of October 7th, you have every incentive politically in the world to continue to sell this picture of suffering to the rest of the world because everyone's going to buy it. And I think that's what's happening more than anything else.
It's horrible. The media, it's funny how they say Jews run the media, and yet the media is so one-sided.
It's tough. And I actually, these are some of the comments that I get all the time about how, like, the Jews run the media. So obviously it must be. I mean, not only is it one of the oldest and most anti-Semitic tropes in history. But I do think that the reason why a lot of Jewish people do want to go into media and why it is something that people do is because we get treated so unfairly by the media time and time again. And I think part of this vilification aspect of it all is that you can't say that the media is unfair towards Israel if you think that Israel and the Jews are running the media.
Right.
So that's a way that you can almost guard yourself in a debate. But it's just obviously nonsense. And I think the reason why Jewish people want to work in spots in the world of media is because they know how harshly we get treated, and they know that this is how people get attacked. This is how the world turns on the Jewish people. It is through narratives. It's through what we called blood libels back in the day. And I think that's just, you know, Israel is the avenue for most people to express their anti-Semitism today.
Yeah. I could not agree more. And you are, do you currently live in Jersey or are you in Manhattan?
I live in New York City. Yeah.
Okay. So you're, all right. Well, that's really rough. Not only are you in the Mecca of American anti-Semitism, but you might have a new mayor in November that will not only ruin New York City, but is incredibly anti-Semitic.
Horribly.
I mean, most of my family, my uncle might be moving to Israel. At least it's between Israel and Florida. What are your thoughts there?
Words
are difficult sometimes.
Yeah, they are.
Most of your family is in the New York, New Jersey area that's outside of Israel, or is there? Okay. So have you spoken to your family at all about what could happen if Mamdani wins?
So here are my thoughts about that whole situation, right? I'm hoping that a lot of the time when a political leader comes in and makes all of these promises in any direction, a lot of them don't get fulfilled, and a lot of it is just rhetoric. I am hoping that he comes in, if when he gets elected, it seems in all likelihood that he'll get elected, he comes in and because of the checks and balances and power, he won't get the ability to act on any of these horrible things that he wants to propose, right? Because most people, even in politics, I think still realize that what he's arguing for is a little bit too radical to actually be put into place. That being said, there's always that what if factor. What if what I'm saying is not how it's going to play out in reality? And I think that the worst part about it all is that he has made this fight against Israel so central to his campaign, where if you go on TikTok, you can see him explain why, you know, he's just not a fan of Israel, and why even his wife, who he just got married to, is like a very strong pro-Palestinian activist. And I do want to just say, even though those things exist, it shouldn't always end up in just the demonization of Jewish people, which it really does.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that the issue with Mamdani here is that he is very vocal about it. And unfortunately, his followers, especially in the New York area and in the university, you know, in the different universities here, they are so unbelievably anti-Israel and anti-Semitic, to the point where there must be enough of them now to have put him into a position of power. So that, to me, is the worst part, is that he's going to embolden these people who are just filled with hatred, and they are lost individuals, and he's going to empower them to move forward with whatever agenda they have. I mean, listen, this is a free country. Everybody can do what they want to do. But the minute it turns violent, you really need to ask yourself, like, is now the time to go? And did we learn something from our grandparents' generation? Like, is now the time to go? This is a horrible, horrible thing that we even need to be thinking about.
It's terrible. You really, I mean, I don't know if this was on your reading list when you were in high school, but I read Night by Elie Wiesel.
Yeah, I knew you were about to say that.
Okay. Well, of course. But I think it's a requirement for most.
For life. It's a requirement for life.
And now I just want to reread it. Now talking about it, but it's wild because you think, well, that could never happen now. I remember reading it in school thinking, well, that could never happen now, but it's what's happening now. The older generation is saying, well, that's what it felt like before the Holocaust then. So, you know, what do you do? do you leave? Do you flee? And I hate using the word flee because I feel like that sounds as if you are afraid. And preservation does not mean you're afraid.
No, what you're saying is totally rational to me. I mean, I think the biggest thing is that if we have learned anything from our grandparents' generation in Europe, it's that when the signs of violence present themselves, you have to pay attention. So if these things start to happen in numbers and are possibly even like state sponsored, where nobody's doing anything about it, or these protests in the city become violent and nobody stops it, at that point, you do have to look yourself in the mirror and say, okay, maybe for the preservation of not only myself, but of my family, I might need to go somewhere else. And I think, unfortunately, it's something that we all keep in mind. If I were a betting man, would I say that that's what's actually going to happen? I still feel like it's a no. And I still do feel like we're okay here because, you know, I don't even know why, but I still do feel like we're okay for now at the very least. But definitely an interesting time to be a Jewish person in New York City because, you know, the world is not in approval of you. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, without any facts. I mean, it's wild how outspoken people are these days when it comes to anti-Semitism. And I do not like them saying, well, it's not anti-Semitism, it's anti-Zionism. I hate that. And you look like you have something very specific to say. I want to hear it.
I have so much to say about this because this is, that's exactly it. And I'm so glad that you brought that up because that is the method of vilification. I mean, as if Jewish people don't care about Israel. I mean, are we even being serious? If you say that to a Jewish person, by the way, even absurd. There are plenty of Jews on both ends of the political spectrum, but to insist that we don't need an Israel, not just to disagree with whatever's happening in the Israeli government, by the way, totally acceptable. Do whatever you want within the realm of political discourse. But to say that Israel does not have a right to exist as a safe haven for the Jewish people. The only Jewish state. So I think that when you use this methodology of separating Jews from Israel, it would be the you know, it's the dumbest thing in the world to me.
It really
because is. Because it is so central to our culture, not even just the people who are incredibly religious or maybe they're not, but all across the Jewish community, Israel is the one thing that is universal, right? This is the place that our culture was born. And this is the place that we can go if anything bad happens to us in the world. So I recently went to the Anne Frank Museum in New York City. And I did. It was unbelievable. They did a really great job of you know, showing everything. What's so important to me after visiting the Anne Frank Museum is the way that so many people internalized it, right? A lot of people say, wow, you know, like this was a horrific attack against the Jewish people, and especially, you know, a young girl who was so full of life. It is the most heart-wrenching thing in the world. I cried, admittedly. I bawled my eyes out because I was like, this is where humanity goes completely wrong. And to see people internalize it, at least on social media and on different forums, where it was a horrible attack on Jews, but let's not get confused between Jewish people and Zionists. Can you not imagine what the situation of the world would have looked like in World War II if there were a place like Israel where you could go to be safe? I think it would have been, like the game changer, right?
Of
like
course.
Where people could have gone to be safe over there. So I think to say that Jewish people and Israel are two separate entities that shouldn't get confused at all is the dumbest thing in the world. But unfortunately, people do not have the bandwidth to separate the two. And they say, oh, of course a religious group is not the same as a country. But they don't understand that it is our only country. And without it, there has been so many examples of persecution that would limit our existence in the world.
I mean, it's just, it's absurd. And I hate when they say that the IDF is committing genocide. I just think and those are DMs I get and comments like, oh, you're Jewish, you support Israel. You support genocide. It's almost as if they just copy and paste without thinking or knowing anything about the situation.
And that's the thing. They feel they don't need to know to scream these awful choice words mm-hmm. like genocide and apartheid and ethnic cleansing, which can be picked apart quite easily. You know, it's very clear that what's happening in Gaza is not a genocide. They launched a war against Israel, and Israel is responding by taking out the military that ran mm-hmm. this attack on them.
So, and it's the Hamas militants that are hiding in schools and right. children's hospitals. It's not the IDF.
As if this death cult terrorist organization isn't composed of the most evil and dumbest people in the world. As if they're not only just dumb by attacking the most conservative government in Israeli history, but by also putting their people in the line of fire. That's just mm-hmm. pure evil in the highest form. And I think that nobody cares. Like, the conversation is oddly not about Hamas, which I think is just revealing of how people feel about Israel and Jews anyway. They use these vilification tactics and these words so that people who are not thinkers can just hold on to them. Oh, there's a genocide. If there's a genocide anywhere, then by all means stand against it. Yes, absolutely. Of course. But that's not happening here. And it's being used to connect to other examples of things like the Holocaust or like any other example of a genocide in the world. And they're hijacking those terms to move forward with their political agenda. And unfortunately, it's working.
Do you it's very funny because you're right. This is definitely the most conservative that Netanyahu is quite conservative for Israel. And Israel is the only democratic state in the Middle East.
Absolutely.
And it's when I went, this was 11 years ago, and I've only been once, and I went on Birthright, and it was an incredible experience, even though I think I was 22 on the 18 to 22 trip. So I was part of the older crowd, and I still had an amazing time. And I just remember there was nothing about hate. It was all about, you're Jewish, let's come together. You have one, what was funny is that it was, you have 1 ounce of Judaism in you. You're Jewish, you're in, let's go, let's do it. I am a couple months here in Florida now, and I met a lot of people on Bumble BFF, because at my age, it's not always easy meeting people. And the people I've met, for the most part, I love them. And one girl I met, we went out, had drinks. She was really sweet. We get together again, and she goes, "So you're Jewish?" And I said, "Yes." She goes, "Did you know I'm half Jewish?" And I said, "No, I didn't. It doesn't come up in conversation, you know, often, but that's amazing." And she goes, "But I really identify with my Judaism, but I was raised celebrating Christmas, so I'm going to celebrate both with my kids." And I was like, I think that sounds amazing. And I wish more people were like, let's just be together. Why do we have to be separate?
I'm all for it. I think the denominations in general are harmful, especially in Judaism. Like, I think one of the things that I've had the like ultimate privilege of learning is just about the different sections of Judaism and like what they all have to offer. And one thing in particular,
do you mean the difference between secular and Orthodox? Is that what you're
just just how different people express their Jewish belief or culture or whatever it is. And I learned so many interesting things where the people who tend to lead in communities, they're unifiers. They unite the community around something that we can all agree around. And I have so many of these amazing leaders, be it, famous people like rabbis and things of that nature, or people who were just in my community who inspired me when I was a little kid. And I think that the one commonality between all of them is that they were incredibly keen on uniting the people around them. And I think that's what the world should be. Like, we should be united, you know? We should not have, you know, these horrible terrorists and people who are trying to, steal that opportunity from us to live in a, united and peaceful way.
Right.
But I do think that within the Jewish community, there's so much love and there's so much positivity, and it gets so hated on by the rest of the world that, we need, more people who are willing to stand for Israel and stand for the Jewish community, no matter what level or no matter what background you come from. If you want to unite people, I'm all for it. If you want to take part in any way, or even if you take interest in our culture, there's nothing that excites me more.
Right. I mean, I know a few people, well, not personally, but I see people on social media that are intrigued by Kabbalah. And that's, I don't want to say it's a form of Judaism, but it's an inspirational part of Judaism, you could say. And I don't know about your family, but in my family, we have different religions that have married in, and we celebrate everything. I grew up celebrating Hanukkah. I grew up celebrating Christmas. We didn't go to church, of course, but had candy on Easter. Now, I don't want anybody to come for me. I obviously know that Easter is not a holiday specifically for candy. I'm just trying to say that I grew up celebrating many, many different holidays, not just Jewish holidays, because See, now I'm wording it in a very inappropriate way. The people that married into my family are now my family. They were not born Jewish. They didn't convert. And that's fine.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
I'm totally with you. I think if there's a way for Jewish people to exist in the world, no matter how they express it and no matter what that means to them, I'm 100% all for it, because if you look out at what's happening, a lot of people are just dropping it flat. And I think that's the biggest travesty of all. You know, not everybody needs to be a rabbinical leader, but right. for it to mean so, for that identity to mean something to you as a person and for that community to matter to you, that's all that I care about. I think it's very important.
I agree. I think it's very important. And I think the people, whether they be Jewish or not, that say, I will only date someone of my own religion that grew up the same way as me, you're putting yourself into a rut that's very difficult to get out of, because if you only date a certain type of person trying to find your partner for life, what if you don't? What if you just don't mesh well with these people that you're dating? What happens then? You're just never going to date someone of a different religion or race.
It's a fair point. No, 100%.
I'm not going to ask you anything personal, because no. I know that was part of the deal. Don't worry.
I get it. Yeah.
Did you grow up celebrating, maybe not celebrating isn't the right word. When you were growing up, did anybody in your life wish you a Merry Christmas?
Not particularly. No, I mean, okay. No.
If someone wishes you a Merry Christmas now, are you offended?
No, offended? No.
Thank you.
Definitely
not. I hate, and this isn't a Jewish thing. I think it's so wild that we live in a day and age where saying Merry Christmas or Happy Hanukkah to someone that doesn't celebrate can be considered offensive, and that you have to say Happy Holidays.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that there is no reason why fundamentally that human beings cannot live at least in peace, mm-hmm. right? It's always every reason that goes a little bit far, like especially just the desire to spread your ideology through the world. I mean, this is the most ridiculous thing ever. This is what Israel mm-hmm. is facing, of course, right? People mm-hmm. want to spread their ideology throughout the world. I think that is so harmful. And that mm-hmm. at the very least, I would love nothing more. I don't even know if it's a completely idealistic hope, but I would love nothing more than to live in a world where when people really don't like each other, at the very least, they don't start wars over it, you know?
Yes.
And I think everyone in Israel, it sounds like, oh, you sound like such a pacifist. That's not what I'm saying. I think everybody in Israel will agree with me. We don't want to live in war 24/7. You know, they need to do what they need to do. That's the approach. But everybody in Israel despises living in constant fear.
Right.
You know, I was mm-hmm. just there in May and I had to run into a bomb shelter. And to think that people in Israel are doing that 1 to 2 times every single day for now years, it's horrible. Mm-hmm. It's horrible. Nobody horrible. Wants that. And I think that will only come from people being able to look into the eyes of another person and say, I don't mind you. You know, mm-hmm. I don't mind you. I think that's the answer.
We don't share the same beliefs, and that's okay.
I'm with you.
Now, you mentioned earlier that you want to be some form of a leader. Does that mean that there could be a political future for you?
No, definitely not.
Okay. Not the answer I was expecting, Justin, I'll be honest.
politics. No, politics are for power mongers and evil people, in my opinion. I will say that. That's a big claim. Politics, no, that's not. No, I would like to learn how to do something positive for my community on an industrial level. And if any way that I'm leading people, my true goal, and I know it sounds all nice and cookie cutter, but the real truth for me is that I would love nothing more than to be an inspiration for somebody who was like me when I was a kid. You know, I was like super wide-eyed and excited, and I had this spirit where everything I wanted to do felt possible. And I think most people go through this process of becoming an adult where that entire way of life is stripped from them, and you're told to be realistic above all and do what you need to do to survive. And I don't really see the benefit of living life in that way. I think you need to find some sort of hill where you can stake your name on. You can, you know, you can die on that hill and do everything that it takes in order to live in a way that's consistent with what you believe to be true about the world. So what I believe is that I want to be a positive influence in the world. I believe in the unity of the Jewish people, and I want to be some sort of force to move that forward. And Iron Dome Coffee has absolutely been my vessel so far to do that. And thank God it's been working.
Yeah, it really is great coffee, you guys. It really is. And I know bad coffee. This is not bad coffee. Now, I want to circle back to the name Iron Dome Coffee. One, I mean, I could ask how did, I will ask, how did you come up with that? Obviously, we know Israel has the Iron Dome. And two, was that difficult trademarking that?
So, okay. So first part of that question, why the name Iron Dome, right? The first is, there are a couple short reasons for this. The first is that it's definitely universally known. So people look at it and they're like, okay, I know what the Iron Dome is. Two, it's incredibly aggressive. It shows like we're, you know, we're here. This is what's defending us. And this is, you know, it means something. It's like a strong stance to take. And the third thing is that the Iron Dome is Israel. Where would Israel be without the Iron Dome? We know this. We just watched thousands of rockets be flung into Israel. And the Iron Dome did an unbelievable job of taking out more than 90% of those. Where would we be without that? So I think that when I am trying to build a company here that represents Israel and that represents helping wounded soldiers in Israel, Israel's biggest defense is the Iron Dome, and it's the thing that is keeping us alive, right? It's the thing that is keeping people in Israel alive. So what better symbol than that? You know, there's no better symbol than that. And the second part with the trademark, no, I didn't actually have any problems with that. I'm not. No,
that's
it was fine. Yeah, it was fine.
It is a really inspiring, inspiring name for your company.
Thank you.
So where do you, do you even have plans? Where do you see yourself going from here?
I want this company to be, you know, I want every single person in the United States, and hopefully later, you know, beyond that, who supports Israel, to at least give us a shot. One, because it's delicious coffee that you can totally integrate into your life the way that you have and the way that so many other people are doing right now. But this coffee stands for something. This company means something to people. Like we are injecting meaning into your life, you know? If you believe in Israel and you support it and you feel strongly about Israel, this is a product that we made just for you. And every cup you drink is going directly to supporting Israel, you know? So like this is, this means something. You know, it's a mission. It's not just a, it's not just any old coffee company. And I mean, listen, a lot of people really love the coffee. You know, the two of us can agree on that, right? But it's a mission. Like this is a passion. This is a way of life for people. Every day that they put a Keurig pod into the machine, they can say in their heads, I'm supporting Israel, and I'm a part of a community of people that support Israel. And that to me is unbelievable. And I'm so happy to be at the head of that.
Justin, I have to say again, you are incredibly brave and articulate. I don't even think I said this before, but you're very smart. And
thank you.
Thank you so much for coming on Locks of Laughs. I mean, I know the show is called Locks of Laughs. And yes, I, a lot of the time we're laughing on this show. But there have been a few times specifically when I've had Jewish and Israel activists like yourself on, where we take a beat and instead of laughing, we talk and get to know each other and talk about Israel and Judaism and anti-Semitism. And thank you so much for being a part of that. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. And Ashley, I love your page. I mean, I'm going to give you your flowers now. You make me laugh when I'm out here being too serious and everything.
Oh,
so
thank you. You know, you're not too serious at all, actually. This was lovely getting to know you more and seeing the inner workings of your brain a little bit. And I just think what you're doing is exceptional. And I don't even know you, but I'm so proud of you. And I see incredible things for your future, but nothing in politics. Absolutely nothing.
Thank you. Definitely never in politics. No way.
No, yeah, it's a toughie. But I just think you're incredible. And before I let you go, I want you to tell everybody where they can find you and or find Iron Dome Coffee. Of course, it will be listed at wherever this is posted and whatnot, but still say it out loud.
Absolutely. Yeah. So you can buy our coffee at irondomecoffee.com. And if you want to find me and see what I'm up to, just go on Instagram, type in Iron Dome Coffee or Justin Yehuda. That's me. That's my company. You know, give me a follow.
And I follow Iron Dome Coffee on Instagram, everybody. So if you can't spell, just go to my Instagram. You'll find it. And I recently posted about them. So you'll find, well, by the time this, yeah, no, it'll still be up there. I mean, I'm not taking it down, but you know what I mean, at the top of the grid. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Justin. It was Basharit that I found you on Instagram. And that's meant to be, everybody, in Hebrew.
Meant to be. No doubt about it. And when you come to the city to, you know, do a comedy show, I'll sit right in the front and you can have a blast.
Yes, I can't wait. Okay, so before we started recording, Justin said that he loves sitting in the front at comedy shows so that he can be talked to by all of the comedians, which, by the way, again, just that is your bravery, because my husband hates when he comes to a show, he sits in so far in the back and in a corner and wears a cap.
Yeah, that's not good. I mean, you know, you're going to be messed with when you sit in the front. You just got to be able to take it.
That's incredibly accurate. I really don't like when people sit in the front and they're like, no, don't talk to me. Don't sit in the front in a comedy show. Thank you, Justin. This was incredible, everybody. Iron Dome Coffee is phenomenal. I can't wait for you all to try it.
Thank you, Ashley.
Thank you.